Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host today, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 18th round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Singapore Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Timo Albus Daly. How are you?
Just about recovered from all that breakneck thrill Singapore Grand Prix. No, I'm just kidding. I'm perfectly fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I had a rather more relaxed weekend than I used to do when it's Grand Prix. Saturday, just floating around, tidying up some bits.
Helped by the Grand Prix, no doubt.
Yeah, and then Sunday, went out in the morning and listened to the first hour of the Grand Prix while driving home from Bicester, because clearly there wasn't actually a great deal I was going to miss if I wasn't paying full attention. Watched the final half hour or so on the telly at home, so not the worst. But importantly, we are joined by the Paddock Chronicles' Nathan Hugh and also by Jonathan Koo. Welcome back to the podcast, gents. How are you both?
Well, like, it was a busy week for me in the lead-up to the Singapore Grand Prix, so I guess... I mean, nothing really happened during the race, so I just treat it as sort of like a break-ish. But yeah, it's always good to be back on the pod. Good to chat with Tiamma, and also good to be joined by John as well. So yeah.
Yep, it was. It's good to be back on the pod, as Nathan mentioned. I think it's definitely been a while since we got into the podcasting mood. I actually attended the Singapore Grand Prix in person, actually, which I would say it was definitely more of an experience seeing Lewis Capaldi rather than the race. Because I think that the main thing I was pointing out to my friend who was watching it with me was like, it just seems like Lando and Max were like right close together, but that seems about every lap, isn't it? But yeah, the cars whizzing past probably kept me awake more than anything else.
Managed to stay awake simply by the noise alone, let alone the excitement.
Well, yep, exactly.
There are some interesting points to take away from the whole weekend. The interesting one, first one, is that this is only the third Grand Prix this season that has seen everyone finish, four if we include the Chinese sprint race. And remarkably for Singapore, no safety car or VSC. We did have a short waved yellow flag section, but that was about it when it came to any real lengths of peril. However, on the flip side of the coin, it is worth noting that F1 Academy is having its own 2021 season finale, it seems. Just 9 points separate Meyer Werg and Dorian Pang going into the final round, the French driver leading, but with Werg having won the last two feature races from pole and making her sprint race podiums even more impressive, there is a bit of a shift in the balance here. So it's all to play for going into Vegas in a few rounds' time for them.
I'm going to look forward to talking about F1 Academy after Vegas, when we've not really talked about it that much this year, because the gaps between all of the rounds and then the rounds themselves not being that many in number haven't kind of warranted enough. But I think when we get to it, it's gonna be a nice conversation, because everything and all the drivers have had their moment, it feels like. Even if you've not been on the podium, you've still had flashes of brilliance from most of them, I feel like, in places. So it's nice that we get it going down. And there was the possibility that the championship got wrapped up this weekend, which would have made Vegas a little bit less entertaining as they would have wanted to be, considering the whole point, I think, in going to Vegas is, hey, it's glamour, drama and season finale-ness. And that would have been awkward if they then hadn't been able to do part of that. But they'll get that now, and they can really lean into all of the all-to-play-for sorts of language that they want to use.
Yeah, that makes it a far more interesting season. Werg really sending it in. I think it was the feature race on the Sunday on a wet track. Essentially,
wet track, last lap.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Done. Sends a dummy on Doria and then sort of swings it around the outside. And it was a bit of a worldy of a move. And you go, I see it. Every now and then F1 Academy comes out with these absolute stonkers. So it's looking forward to that when we get to Vegas. But we'll rattle on into what we're actually here to talk about, the Singapore Grand Prix. We'll jump in, as we usually do, with our team-by-team analysis. Kicking off at the top of the standings, now sealed in position as winners of this year's Constructors' title, McLaren. Piastri qualified third, Norris qualified fifth, and they would swap order with Piastri finishing fourth and Norris finishing third.
Yeah, I mean, there's always something to talk about with McLaren, and it always seems to be frustrating, and I think that's the one thing we'll all agree on for this part of it. And I think there's been this thing all season of, oh, polite racing and papaya rules and whatever the hell that means. And yeah, we all kind of knew what was what, but it's been put more in black and white now, not that we needed it, but just for the record, it more feels like, if anything else, with Piastri's team radio in particular, and how they're utilising it. And I don't think this quote-unquote polite racing was ever going to last, because it simply can't if you're going to have a proper fight for a championship. and Coulthard on the commentary, if any of you heard that, he heard Piastri's team radio where he was saying about, well, if you need to avoid driving into one rival by driving into a teammate, that's probably not the best way of avoiding someone. He put it a bit more colourfully, but he kind of agreed with them essentially saying, yeah, it is pretty much a valid argument, and the gloves have got to be off now, surely.
I'll let one of our guests join in, because I've got a few points as well.
Yeah, I think I can go. Yeah, I mean, once I saw that incident in the opening laps, I'm just really baffled. Like, what is the papaya rules anymore? Like, to be honest, I feel for Oscar so bad. I'm a McLaren fan, and yeah, it's just so weird. Like the opening laps. I mean, them winning back-to-back constructors in such a long time, it should be like something worth celebrating, but
You can feel
the
something,
mood,
right?
it was just so odd. And Oscar just had like really like he's losing a lot of momentum in the championship fight. Like just think about Monza and then that horrible weekend in Baku and then now this incident in Singapore. So yeah, I really feel for Oscar. I just hope that he regains momentum in his championship fight. And you never know, like one DNF and the points gap is going to narrow down again. So yeah, happy that they won back-to-back constructors, but it wasn't a matter of whether they'll win it was a matter of when. And it's kind of hilarious they took so long to win to seal this champ this constructor championship fight, despite having one of the best cars on the grid so far. So yeah, I just hope McLaren just let both of their drivers just race. Like what's with the papaya rules? I just don't understand anymore. So yeah.
Maybe the real papaya rules were the friends we made along the way.
Yes. That's good. That's good. Yeah, I need to join.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't have put it better myself. I think I was surprised when the McLaren's crash, I think was it in Canada earlier this season, that didn't erupt as much as it did, even though that was, I think everybody agreed that was Lando's fault. I thought that would be the sparking point, but oh yeah, in the radio broadcast, the post-race interviews, you could tell Piastri was fuming at the decision by McLaren not to take any action towards Lando. And I mean, there have been some suggestions as well, like why weren't they allowed to swap? Why did I think although there was one point there was a situation where Lando was given first option to pit, which I think was fair because I mean he was the lead car in that situation, so fair enough. But so I think that there have been an overemphasis on the papaya rules, trying to be fair, but it's not helping the narrative that it's supposed to be a team game because like it's building into the narrative that Lando is still McLaren's favorite driver and Piastri is just the laptop. It's not a great look when all of them were celebrating Constructors' Championship and your championship leader was in the media pen.
Yeah, the thing with Piastri, and certainly when it came to asking Norris about the strategy, was a very interesting one, because obviously general rules with F1 teams is you give the lead driver in the race the sort of lead strategy. You give them the chance to pit first, and they asked Norris if they would allow, if he would allow them to pit Piastri first so he could avoid essentially being undercut by Leclerc, which, considering the distance Leclerc was from the back of him, was an absolutely ridiculous question to ask. But it does sort of show
It was Monza
potential.
all over again.
Yeah, it sort of shows that there's this ridiculous idea of there being a
Yep.
bias, sort of a favoritism to sort of certainly one side of the garage, or potentially it's not that way. It's just the way that it comes across on the broadcast, and that's why there's this sort of weird atmosphere from the public around the way McLaren works. And yeah, I'll agree with everyone on the sort of the fact that it was bolshy of Piastri to sort of make that point on the radio of sort of, if you've got to crash into the back of it, if you've got to crash into your teammate to avoid crashing into another car, that's pretty terrible avoidance.
Yep.
Use terrible as a definitive adjective there. But yeah, it was a big move from Norris, and he's lucky that it stuck with no lasting issues, especially when you consider the angle that that front wing end plate was at for the entire Grand Prix. At previous races and previous seasons gone by, Magnussen was religiously meatball flagged for having a wing in that
You can
exact
hear Gunter Steiner through the years from COTA, can't
situation.
you? On the team radio, going, why are you not doing something about
Yeah.
this? How
Yep,
that wasn't
exactly.
meatball flagged, how they McLaren got incredibly lucky they didn't have to do a front wing swap. So I think they lucked into that one. Otherwise, it was a conventional race from them, but the pit wall up until this point really ought to have taken charge of races, made concrete decisions, and made drivers obey it, because if you leave the drivers to pick, they're never going to agree on what the strategy should be. They're always going to pick the one that favors their race. Now, with the constructors out of the way, maybe we'll see a shift from the niceties of present to something a little more cutthroat as the drivers are let off the chain, left to go and fight for the championship. And
I really hope it's that way. I really hope. If the
in
next race some weird papyrus come back again, I'm gonna be like, do it. The constructor is
in
done. Yeah.
It would be hilarious if this allows Verstappen back into the championship.
I know.
I was just thinking Piastri turn one in COTA. Oh, sorry, I've just driven into Lando because I was avoiding someone else, you know, quote unquote. Like, nothing I could do, guys. And then Max just kind of goes on by and just like, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, because
Though
as I
speaking
said,
about speaking about strategy, I was a little bit worried like there'll be a repeat of Monza again, especially when they, because Norris was in the lead and they asked him, do you want to pit first or would you like your teammate to pit? And then with Leclerc behind as well. So I'm just like, oh please, let's not have another Monza again. So
it
yeah.
happens often in the first one.
I mean, the McLaren pit wall and everything, they haven't been winning any favors. They've been probably taking too many lessons from the Ferrari pit wall sometimes.
Yeah, sort of McLaren is very much a case of too many questions, yes or no. And you're sort of like, yes, stop talking to me. You can see why sort of Norris got or Piastri got to the end of the race and mid sort of congratulations from Zac Brown unplugged the radio from his helmet. I was like,
I saw
that
that.
says everything you need to know about how Piastri's feeling right now in one swift and simple move. But obviously, coming out of Singapore, Norris has a 22-point deficit to his teammate. Verstappen, only a 63-point deficit. And oddly enough, after a great weekend, this keeps Russell in the championship fight as well. He's only 99 points away. Mathematically, there are five drivers in contention. And Leclerc, mathematically, can still do this, but he's a longer shot
That
than
would be the funniest thing of the lot. I mean,
Russell.
Russell was already far-fetched. If Leclerc somehow comes around and does this, you're going, how on earth did that happen?
Yeah, there are, as far as I'm aware, I think 141 points as a maximum still available, and no, 174 points as a maximum still available, which means that Leclerc is still in it with a 163 point gap. So yeah, he's in it by 9 points. So it's
How
quite
much does Piastri dislike Norris, and how much does Verstappen dislike Norris to help him keep taking him and themselves out for the next six, seven races?
Well, this is the thing we saw in qualifying. Obviously, Verstappen suffered in the final sector from the dirty air of Norris ahead, who was slowing down to go for a pit in, and it really hampered his run. So obviously, there's sort of a bone
It's
of
my new favorite
contention.
nickname for Lando now, is just not Oscar.
Yeah, it wasn't Oscar. He's sort of like, oh, okay. Interesting. We'll see how that plays out for the rest of the season. But with McLaren out of the way, because we could be chasing our tails discussing papaya rules for sort of hours on end, we'll move to something somewhat more clear cut for once, which is Ferrari, somehow still in second place in the constructors. Hamilton qualified sixth, Leclerc qualified seventh, but Hamilton would finish P8 after a 5 second penalty was handed down due to track limit infringements pretty much in the final two laps, and Leclerc would finish sixth overall.
Yeah, they're treading water a lot this year, it seems, and I think that's ultimately the result of them redesigning their car for no apparent reason between the 24 and 25 season, having a pretty decent car last year and essentially just achieving the same thing. So you do wonder there, but again, Ferrari's eyes. Actually, he was flying towards them. It is a damn shame his brakes just went put. Otherwise, he definitely would have got past Antonelli. The rate of knots with which he was chasing down Leclerc and then eating into Antonelli before it all happened was astounding. P2, though, is definitely under threat heavily from Mercedes now if Russell keeps doing Russell things. But I was saying about with the points gap between Norris and Piastri, one Grand Prix could change it massively for either side. So I'm not too worried about them because it's ultimately only P2, and I don't think they care too much overall in the same way that I don't think Lewis cared too much. They got a 5 second penalty because he's probably just happy he got to the end of that race in relatively one piece. And Alonso, I mean, he had some great team radios, which we'll get to later, but one of them being the anger towards the end of the race because of essentially what you and I definitely keep saying at least once a podcast, Jesse, of could we just have some uniformity with penalties and what's acceptable and what isn't from the stewards? And he's been on the receiving end unfairly of stuff before, and he definitely never forgets any kind of wrongdoing done to him and makes sure to bring it up whenever he can to try and kind of hammer the point home if it's now to his disadvantage.
Yeah, I don't think this was too much to Alonso's disadvantage. I think he was more bemoaning the fact the Aston Martin didn't really have the pace to catch a car that had no brakes around
Well,
Singapore.
that, but more at the end is kind of the track limits he was going on about. Why is Lewis not
It's
getting
hard
in? I
to
think.
he, but he did though. That's the thing. He
Oh yeah, but
he
this
got
was
black and white
before he
flags
was in the
for
last
it.
couple of laps. He
What
was moaning
more?
to make sure that it happened then, because
Yeah.
he's thinking if he doesn't get something, why not? Because I've been on that side of it where I've gotten something for a lot less.
I
So
think
it's just that.
from where Alonso was sitting, it might have been tricky to know that Hamilton was accruing the black and white flags and the penalties for his track limit infringements. But yeah, both cars suffered brake issues throughout the race. Singapore is hard on that facet of the car. Charles was suffering from very early on too, huge amounts of lift and coast from as early as his first stint on the tyres as well. Lewis's problem was exaggerated when he stopped for those fresh tyres. We actually saw it as he swapped positions with Leclerc. The dive into turn one, you get that huge puff of sort of black grey smoke out the front axle. That's just the brake pads absolutely giving up the ghost at that point. So that was before he'd even got close to catching Antonelli. And yeah, it was impressive that he caught Antonelli with failing brake pads at that point. And that second stop for fresh tyres renewed the grip levels, now loading even more onto that front axle, even more into those already worn brakes. So it wasn't really a surprise that by the time he caught Antonelli, it was pretty much metal on metal contact and it was never going to end well at that point. So yeah, I think the more impressive fact is that Lewis brought home a racing car around Singapore with no brakes without stuffing it into the wall. That's great adjustment on the brake balance and really turning up the engine sort of ability to recharge and use that MGUH, no, MGUK unit to its full advantage to really harvest the energy and get the car slowed down. But yeah, Alonso annoyed at it, but in a competitive season, he would have done exactly the same, limping a car home because you know he's in the points and know that he's going to cling on to something. Alonso would have driven exactly the same way. But again, Alonso ruthlessly competitive. If you want to talk about Ferrari penalties, their penalty for crashing into Norris in the pit lane during one of the practice sessions was half
P2.
that of Sainz's for missing the national anthem in Japan while suffering stomach issues following his appendicitis. So if you want a proper argument about how stupid FIA penalties are, there's your argument.
In the FIA's defense there, though, that was funny with the pit lane incident.
Oh yeah, it was funny, but it does show just how stupid potentially fining Carlos Sainz €10,000 is.
I think that the only solace we can take from that is, well, Ferrari has it's all monetary anyway, so it doesn't really affect the action on track. But yeah, I think we can all agree that the FIA has always never been known for consistency, besides the sheer fact that it's always inconsistent.
Yeah.
But I mean, for Ferrari's race itself, I was actually surprised that when Leclerc jumped Antonelli and like on all the hustle and bustle in turn one, he was actually holding off Antonelli for pretty much the whole entire first stint. And if I'm not mistaken, yeah, actually the undercut actually cut into a bit of Piastri's gap. But then, of course, that there was no way to catch him. But then I think Antonelli did. We'll come to Antonelli later. But I think Leclerc was doing a pretty decent job holding Antonelli behind until he was just dive bombed into. I think was it turn one, or and then I think that's where it gave up, and that's where Ferrari decided to stop the cars, which. Fair enough. Hamilton had the gap anyway, so it was worth a try. But with the failing brakes, there was not much we can do. As much as I like to give Ferrari grief for all the creative strategies that they do, like this one, I can't really blame anything besides the car just wasn't good enough.
Yeah, and I think echoing John, I think Carlos won here a couple of years, just literally a few years in 2023, right? If I'm not mistaken, the only non-Red Bull winner for that season. And now to see that the car just lacked pace, like it was just slow. They didn't qualify well in a track like Singapore, where track position is pretty much king. They really didn't make an impression in the race as well, and paired with, Lewis's brake failure towards the end. Yeah, it just feels like one of the many, many stories we've seen from Ferrari throughout the season so far, where they start usually quite well during practice and qualifying, the drop off, and during the race they just try to salvage whatever they can. So like what John said, it's more for like the memes and vibes at this point. Like as long as they see P2 in the constructors, it's all okay. So yeah, but I
That's the
mean,
thing, right? You do all of this, you go for a completely different design from last year over the winter break. You have a new driver come in with all that worth of experience. You're doing all these personnel changes, and you essentially just end up in the same place
yeah,
doing.
exactly.
You've not gained much. You've not really lost too much of anything,
Yep.
and you kind of go, well, we're doing well, but also we're not making an impression. And
Exactly.
everyone just kind of scratching their heads going, so what was the point? Why did you not just
Yep.
continue with some things? But again, we could, like Jesse was saying earlier, we could be talking in circles on this one for many, many years and not get anywhere, much like Ferrari appeared to be doing.
Yep. Yeah, it's a chasing your tail cut point when it sort of comes to arguing with Ferrari. I think they were lucky to walk away with the points they were this weekend. Meanwhile, flip side of the coin, Mercedes. Russell stuck it on pole in a bit of a surprise to everyone apart from me, who had predicted that, and would go on to take the race win. Antonelli qualified fourth and finished fifth, a real turnaround in form for the rookie this season as well. So I think it is, time to give both of those drivers a contract for upcoming seasons, Timo.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what George Russell has to do at this point outside of the top three. He's the only driver to have won multiple races, and even if he just won the one race this year, that's still kind of Carlos Sainz 2023-esque in terms of if he was on the bubble for 24, you'd be questioning why. And it's a shame. I was with Julian Palmer in agreement when he was saying, "I wish that first lap that Russell had done in qualifying was the pole lap because it was the one where he touched the wall just the right amount." But then he went ever so marginally quicker on the second lap. It was a shame, really, because it was still a good lap, obviously, but it was a less impressive one visually. But he then didn't really look in doubt for that victory for the entire Grand Prix. I know he didn't lead every lap, but it's just kind of what he does when he's in that position. He's clinical. Three of his other four Grand Prix victories have been that sort of clinical. When you think about Vegas as the most recent of those clinical ones, Austria, oh, and Canada actually, sorry, this year as well. That was just absolutely clinical from him. Austria last year was the only time really where he was clinical, but in third, and he was just waiting for something to happen, and sure enough, the opportunity then came his way when Verstappen and Norris came together, and he took full advantage of it. The rest of the time, when he's there, he's there, and it's a shame we haven't been able to see him in a championship fight yet, because I get the feeling it'd be a little bit like couple of Max's victories earlier on this season. He gets into that lead from not being in pole, but then once he's there, he stays there, and good luck getting past him.
Yeah, I think hats off to Russell, like what you said, DMO. I think if he was in a car that was capable to fight for the championship, I would really see how he would be able to perform. But I
Mathematically,
think,
he is.
oh yeah, that's true. But well, that's besides the point. I think given Russell's track record in Singapore, especially, I think really just hats off to him. He controlled. I mean, qualifying on pole and just driving brilliantly. You know, had a good start. Manage the race really, really well. So it's like it's in those situations where the car is right and he's just clinical and he just delivers those kind of wins. So yeah, just great race from Russell. I think Kimi, he did well to recover as well, qualified well, did pretty decent during the race. I think he has quite a rough few weekends as well with the car, you know, not being able to get with the stability of the car. So not sure what he's doing, but I guess he found something to gain back his mojo. So I just hope he continues to just stay close with Russell and hopefully they can catch Ferrari in the constructors. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Russell did pretty much as good a race as anybody could have hoped for. I think the moment he secured pole, I don't think it was in any question. I remember just like the opening couple of laps, just seeing Russell's lead increase and increase. By the point it reached double digits, I turned to my friend next to me, you know, and I said to him, "Yeah, Russell's got this in the bag. Unless there's like a big safety car or like a crash gate situation." So, pretty much he was not bothered. I think the only time we heard of anything from Russell was when they were coming up to lap the back markers. So, comfortable win, very assured, and hope to see more from signing up Toto. I think for Antonelli, he held his nerve because when he was held up by Leclerc in the first stint for a bit, I saw like they were it was in the DRS train when it took him a while to try and navigate Leclerc, and I think this persisted until the first round of stops. By the time he made an audacious dive bomb, which was quite a brave move, and kudos to Kimi for pulling it off. But then following that, I just don't think that Piastri or Norris were just anywhere being able to get caught. So maybe he could have gotten closer to Piastri towards the end, especially following the contact and everything like that. But pretty much did as he's told and did what he could. So decent race for Mercedes, and I think now they're quite comfortable for P2 in the constructors. I think Ferrari at this point would just given up.
Yeah, I think Mercedes are going to be able to chase down Ferrari. They ought to be looking over their shoulder with the rate that Mercedes have got both their drivers absolutely on form. They've got the car under them. There's a big pressure on Ferrari to sort of get things right if Mercedes are going to operate at this level for the remaining sort of, what have we got, five, six races still to go, plus one of them. We've got sprints as well, earning bonus points. Yeah, FP2 Toto Wolff said that Antonelli will 100% be a Mercedes driver in 2026. There's no word still on what they're doing with George. It was constant questioning over the weekend whether or not that's going to happen. I think this has given him a chance to put yet another zero on the end of his price tag for the next season, especially if Mercedes do have a top running car from the off next season. This could be special. And yeah, Kimi, really impressive turnaround for him. I think it's easy to sort of put George aside. Great performance, really rebuilt his headspace after that crash in practice sessions. For Kimi, this was a hell of a lot better of a weekend. Obviously, coming out of Monza, questions about him once again. It was a bum performance. Azerbaijan turned it around, picked up the pace, got the points, and has
It's
proven
kind of
that.
amusing. You get give him a more technical street circuit, that's fine. You give him something arguably simpler or more straightforward, at least, just more
Yeah.
speed focused. No. Can't be doing
Yeah.
that.
Possibly just the pressure of a home race. Monza again, Italian circuit. He didn't do very well at Imola. And I won't give kudos to Jacques Villeneuve for sort of saying he seems to struggle with the distractions at his home races, but it's possibly just a case of it's just that rookie trying to find balance and trying to find form. And again, when you've got to be absolutely focused and on it, it demands that bit more of you to really step up the game. And I think that's what's happened with Antonelli over the past two races. Is the demanding circuits have really pushed him to step up his game. And if we see that carry on through the next few races too, I think it's going to be really exciting to see what he can produce. And yeah, I'm looking forward to what he can do going forwards. But overall, absolutely sound weekend for Mercedes. Red Bull, on the other hand, a tale of two kitties as usual. Verstappen qualified second, finished second. Tsunoda qualified 15th, finished 12th, so moved his way up the order. But yeah, Verstappen showing why he's a multiple champion, Tsunoda showing why he's probably out of a drive next season. However, Antonio Giovinazzi still has led more laps around this track than Verstappen has, and he's won Le Mans, so I know who my real winner is.
Things you have to do just to try and justify why you're still somewhat of a Red Bull fan is astounding. I think the more impressive thing for me was the fact that Verstappen could keep Norris in a much better car, mind you, behind him for the entire Grand Prix with all of those issues that he was dealing with. And obviously, quite a nice payback from his point of view after qualifying. I made a separate note of Tsunoda was also in the race because, yes, he may have gone up a few spots. But he got overtaken by someone who got disqualified from qualifying, who then made it into the points in a car that had no real right doing so. So, yeah, half a dozen of one, half a dozen of the other, which were much stronger. So that's all I've got to say on that one.
Yeah, I think in a track where, like Singapore, it's you have the dirty air. It's really difficult to overtake even with the pace advantage. I think Max is just Max. Like he knows how to navigate his way around the Red Bull car. Did really well. Did defend against Lando, who was on fresher tire, obviously. So yeah, kudos to him. I wasn't really worried, even though like Lando was reading the IRS and like he looks like he was gonna catch Max, but Max just defended like a lion. For Yuki, yeah, I mean it's there's really nothing much to say from my end about him. Like if you don't qualify well, and we've seen him struggle to get the grips of the current RB car and the second driver who's driving that car in particular. So yeah, I mean it's a tricky car to drive on a very tricky track like Singapore. So really disappointed for Yuki because we know that he may or may not be up for contract for 2026 as well. So fingers crossed that he will have a better race weekend the next time round. But yeah, definitely with like few races to go, he needs to deliver performances maybe like Baku again. But I don't see it. Like apart from Baku, like he has been quite anonymous for the second half of the season so far. So yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll echo what everybody said about Verstappen. I think he had, if I'm not mistaken, he had a couple of gearbox issues with his shifting. So the fact that he was able to hold off Norris as he did, quite impressive. I think towards the end, He was trying to push Norris back into Piastri, but I think Piastri was just a bit too far off for that tactic to work, but kudos for trying. And then, but I mean, it never really looked like he was under threat from Norris, maybe besides one attempt from Lando. But I mean, I think Verstappen clearly had the upper hand there, even though it was an ailing car. And then probably it didn't help Yuki's confidence when he had to be, well, not only he started so low and got eliminated, he had to be lapped by Max as well, which, right, definitely not the best look.
So with Red Bull out of the way, we'll move on to, well, Timo alluded to one of these drivers in his sort of discussion about Tsunoda, Williams, and both drivers disqualified. They did qualify 12th and 13th, but rear wing infraction, both cars exceeded the maximum limit of 85 millimeters on both sides of the rear wing outer area, obviously where the DRS flap activates. Literally, the FIA have a metal ball on a stick. They poke through the slot gap just to check it's the right height. And unfortunately, it failed there. So both Williams had new rear wings fitted to the back of their cars and were allowed to start, but from the back of the field. I think Albon took some additional bits as well, so took a pit lane start. Ultimately, he would climb up and finish 14th, while Carlos Sainz would go four places further and finish P10.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how he managed to do that. It was quite impressive, really. He was getting close to Hadjar towards the end, and I thought, well, that's as far as he's getting. He's not going to get past Hadjar. And then a couple of laps later, he got past Hadjar, and I go, oh, fair enough. You somehow managed that. But the rear wing in the first place of qualifying, it's another error with a car and a team that we've seen many times before that really shouldn't be happening, and the team shouldn't be falling victim to. So I don't know how those sort of things kind of get missed by whoever in the team is meant to be overlooking that. But yeah, that's frustrating, and Sainz getting a point is quite impressive off the back of that. And you do wonder a bit, what if they had started from where they should have done, what could both of them have done? Because they both were able to move through the field through strategy and overtaking. So if they were starting at 12th and 13th, could we have seen them battling Alonso, trying to hunt down Hamilton towards the end? Maybe that would have been quite dicey. But still, point is a point at the end of the day, and they're kind of comfortable where they are in the constructors, so they're not under too much threat, but that's not really the point. You kind of make those mistakes now while you can maybe afford them, but don't do it again.
Yeah, I think the TV direction for the race was really weird. I didn't get to see a. I mean, okay, one, it was really a, like a boring race, so it's really hard to pay attention. But two, I didn't really see a lot of the Williams, to be honest. So I was really surprised that Sainz even got a point. Like towards the end, I'm just like, wait, he was in the race and he got a point. I'm just like, yeah, I barely saw Albon on the coverage, at least from my end.
I don't think we saw
From what,
either of them. I think
yeah,
aside from maybe the lapping, when Russell was
exactly.
coming through, you saw them, but again, flash and you miss it sort of job. You didn't see any of the overtakes from Sainz. You had to kind of
Yeah,
see it on the
so
timing tower.
I barely noticed them during the race, but yeah, that double disqualification, it's just an operational error, but it's just really weird. It shouldn't happen, but yeah, I mean, luckily they are a little bit ahead in the championship fight or the midfield, but yeah, I think also first back-to-back points for Carlos since Miami, Imola, and Monaco as well.
Yeah, I mean, considering that earlier this season Ferrari had the first double D disqualification from the race as well. So, like, I mean, it's kind of weird that it happened twice, but yeah. But yeah, so I mean, for Williams, I was impressed actually because Sainz really dragged that medium tire stint for pretty much the whole race. I was like, I didn't realize it wasn't that far back as well. So
It was about like 50 laps, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I think he coaxed that tire, the tire whispers that status for pretty much the most entirety of the race, and he made it work. I think, like, especially going for a last bit splash and dash with the soft tires, and just got into the points. I think without that, he probably didn't have to rely on such a strategy and could use a more conventional strategy. But Sainz probably was buoyed by his recent podium. I think he's going from strength to strength. Not sure what is Albon feeling the pressure yet, but I mean, I think Sainz is feeling a bit more settled in Williams than he was probably like a few months ago.
Yeah, Sainz has definitely found his feet under that team, with that team now, and sort of is ploughing on with sort of making it work and I don't know. It's just nice to see that he's sort of properly structured up and sort of got used to the car. And I mean, both drivers had a good weekend when you bear in mind where they started. Albon certainly with a pit lane start, and both of them fighting their way through, sort of past a lot of cars around a circuit that is renowned for being phenomenally hard to overtake on. So this is a good sign for Williams. And again, they're able to sort of produce these results that are getting stronger and stronger across a spread of racetracks, and certainly even at racetracks where coming out the back of Baku, they said they don't entirely know how they achieved that one. So they're going to be sort of going back and looking at sort of what they did for setup, what elements of the car were really working, what were activating along the floor. So we've got a team that's properly understanding the car and moving forward. So it's going to be really exciting for the final few rounds for them, just on a personal level, being able to really perform, showcase what they can do, and hopefully secure sort of more funding, sponsorships, and backing going into the seasons to come if they can prove that they're this team that's fighting at the front again. And yeah, I think that's ultimately very exciting. And yeah, the TV direction was absolutely gashed this weekend. I don't think anyone, even when we had the cars crossing the line, we were sort of cut. We were cutting to like Zac Brown celebrating the pit lane as opposed to the great battle of Alonso and Hamilton with no brakes finishing up like a lap.
Because of the lapping process, everyone
Yeah.
had finished bar those two, and you're going, did we miss something? Is the timing not worked? What? And he's like, no, it's they're still going. He's like,
Yeah,
oh, why are we not looking
exactly.
at
Front
that then?
five finished, the back 10 finished, and then there's this great fight in like the remaining
And
points
there's nothing
placed.
on the feet. I'm like, dude, like I want to see it. Like, oh,
Yeah,
can't
and all the
understand. There's a
Vettel
point to
Alonso
stop.
battle from Japan a couple of years ago, where you've got to go and look
Oh.
for it afterwards for this photo
Yeah,
finish.
yeah,
You're going,
yeah.
why are we not seeing that?
Yeah, it exists voiceovered into the highlights, really. Like, oh, come on, we should have seen this live. But yeah, a great one from Williams. And yeah, the fight behind them and the constructors is scrapping away. It seems to really sort of change which of the remaining sort of five teams is scoring points, ignoring Alpine. And as a result, it's sort of, there's this constant battle that's sort of going on behind them, and they're just sort of edging away, just sort of points every weekend, just inching, 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 and really holding on to that fifth place for almost certainly one of their best seasons for quite some time. So it's, yeah, an absent race for Albon, but potentially that's down to the TV coverage. Great one from Sainz overall, very good for Williams. Aston Martin, a bit like Red Bull, a tale of two kitties. Alonso qualifies 10th, finishes 7th, Stroll qualifies 17th, and finishes 13th.
Fernando Alonso, FP1, first place, it actually was a good omen for once and wasn't a tease of this isn't going to turn into anything. And they really just came alive for the rest of the weekend and had his own kind of Kimi Räikkönen-esque radio comment too, of which was a bizarre thing for the team to tell him as well, of the car in front of you is, what, 13 seconds ahead or something random like that.
It was
He's
that
just
and
going,
the lap
if
cap
you,
as
if you.
well.
Yeah, the lap, that was it. And he's going, if you talk to me every lap, I'm just going to unplug the radio. I'm like, I
It's
don't
going
blame you, to be honest.
to
That's, yeah, that's kind of the thing going on there. So, yeah, I think I've had him in my fantasy team all season, and it's been a very mixed bag, but he finally delivered this weekend in a big way for me. So I was happy with that as well. Stroll is still there.
Stroll is at that team. That is a fair and accurate representation of his position at current.
The number one rule about Aston Martin, you just don't talk about Stroll. Like it is what it is. Like he's there. It's Aston Martin and Stroll. But yeah, I mean Alonso's radio was just it was so funny to hear that after that. Once I saw that like 9.2 seconds pit stop, I'm like, oh yeah. Probably should just leave Alonso to it for a little bit. But yeah, I mean he did really well. I mean it's just a matter of being at the right place at the right time and Lewis suffering from that brake issue. Just narrowly, I think it's about what few tenths, and he would have got Lewis down the line. But yeah, he still did well to capitalize on the advantage of the penalty. And for Stroll, I didn't really see him on the coverage, so I couldn't say
Just follow your
much.
own rule, I reckon. Just don't mention
Yeah,
it.
exactly. So yeah, there's that a tale of two kitties, like what Jesse has mentioned. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Alonso's still serving up the highlights. I think there was another comment. It was like, what hero of the race kind of thing.
Yes.
I was like, yeah, you know what? At least he's keeping us entertained at least. So, decent comment, and I think he made a decent recovery from after his slow pit stop. Right? Because I saw that on the timing sheets and everything like that he was quite a way down. So he definitely must have made some overtakes. So I was like, okay, that's decent, and at least one Aston Martin is doing something. The other one is There.
It was the amusing thing as well of Lewis got the fastest lap of a 1:33 or something. His final lap was a 1:47, and then Alonso's last lap was a 1:36. Like 10 seconds quicker on that last lap. No wonder it was that close coming over the line. And you can tell he was really pushing for it because he doesn't trust the stewards to give that penalty. So it's like, well, I'll go and do it myself then and be, as he said, the hero of the race.
It's I loved Alonso's sort of spice across the weekend, and I think there's something really exciting about the fact that he is still performing and jousting at this absolutely top level. And if Aston Martin have a half decent car next season, think back to what 2022, 23, when he was sort of like a regular fixture on the podium for half a season. I think we're going to see something absolutely fascinating with what he can do with that. And he's going to be driven to achieve things with it. And I don't think at that point it really matters who's next to him, because all you're going to be doing is paying attention to Fernando Alonso. I think Alonso joining the team has been Lance Stroll's greatest advantage because no one cares that he's there anymore. Everyone's just focused on Alonso doing Alonso things weekend after weekend. Funny radio commentaries, brilliant driving, some sublime overtakes. You're like, who cares? Aston Martin have got Alonso. We're still seeing Alonso do stuff. Great. And I think that's possibly the encapsulation of what Aston Martin is doing these days, is they're just adding a little bit of spice here and there, a little bit of Spanish zest. Meanwhile, when it comes to adding zest, or rather something that's absolutely bland and tasteless, Sauber. Hülkenberg qualified 11th and Bortoleto 16th, and Hülkenberg would finish 20th and Bortoleto 17th. Not a very good weekend for them.
Not really much to say here, I don't think. I mean, I've kind of written down it's fun to be disappointed in them because it shows the kind of season they have been having otherwise. But in terms of the race itself, there really isn't much. We didn't see too much from them. Bortoleto had that damage early on. Hülkenberg went for a spin but didn't crash. And that was about it, really. And that pretty much summed up the weekend for them, it felt like.
Yeah, I mean, echoing your literally what you said, you were like, yeah, how come it went for the
There's
spin?
only so much
But
you can say about some of these
yeah,
things.
exactly. Like literally after that, I'm just like, oh, okay, yeah, we're here, we're based in Singapore, and that's it. Let's move on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a race to forget for them, and then I'm quite sure pretty much all of the Sauber team is just waiting for the Audi money to come in, like the full on Audi badging and the full Audi engine itself. At this point, it's like the analogy I would have of like the last few days of school once the exams are all finished. It's just like you're just there to make up the numbers, basically.
That's what it reminds me of, because every time I see Mattia Binotto in a Kick Sauber t-shirt, it just looks so wrong. It doesn't look like it suits him in any way, shape, or form. It looks like you forced a teacher into a like fancy dress on the last day of school, and he's just not happy about it. Because I never see him smiling in that uniform. And I'm sure he does, but we just never see it, and it just doesn't look right. I think grey would suit you much better. It seems more like your personality.
But also,
Yeah.
because when he was working as just the engines guy at Ferrari, we never saw him smile. And that was when Ferrari had great engines. So I think there's this sort of great and sort of inverse relationship between Mattia Binotto smiling and like team performance. So the less we see Binotto smile, the better the team performs. I think that's something Mr. Webber needs to sort of focus on moving forwards with Sauber as it becomes Audi, is sort of go make everything Audi grey, keep Binotto as glum as possible, and watch the team just rocket through the standings. It's going to be incredible. But yeah, quiet one for Sauber. A bit of pain, no real gain. Odd spin for Hülkenberg. I think it was just sort of the strange track conditions, a bit damp in places, a lot of marbles. It seemed to be quite high physical dig on the circuit as well. Just got on the back of it, over sort of overcooked the rear end, and it just went round on him. But yeah, no damage, no real sort of loss of points either for them. So yeah. We don't have anything else to add on Sauber. We might as well move into another team where I don't know if we've got a great deal to add. Racing Bulls. Lawson qualified 14th. Hadjar qualified 8th. Lawson would go backwards one position to finish 15th, as would Hadjar, who would actually tumble a bit further and go to 11th.
Yeah, it talked for a safety car was essentially Lawson's strategy, it felt like, and it wasn't a bad one considering Singapore usually does give you that, but typically this was then one of the races where that didn't happen. And there was a reference in commentary, Jesse, which I think you'll be the only one to get. I don't know if you heard it though, because I think it was in the first half of the race, Martin Brundle was saying something very amusing about Hadjar.
Remind me what it
You'll
was.
know it if you heard it. There was a reference to an old sitcom, which you will know immediately if you heard it, and if you didn't, I can tell you.
Oh, I think I don't know what was the phrase. Like I
I
kind of
know, I
remember,
know, I
but I
know.
don't
Yeah,
remember it, so I was just like, yeah.
basically, Hadra came on the radio to set, I can't remember what they were talking about. I think it was he was te I, the team were telling him something, or he was telling the team about the tires or something. And Martin Brundle just didn't miss a beat, Jesse, and he just went, "Now you listen very carefully. I shall tell you this only once." And for everyone in Britain, they were quite amused by that commentary. Everyone else was probably a little more confused because it was referencing something from when is that? From the 80s, the 90s?
Possibly
That's it,
70s, 80s, I think,
70s even. So it was quite amusing. That was the only kind of real takeaway I had from Racing Bulls, unfortunately, this weekend.
That was, yeah, that is from, am I thinking that's from, oh, LOLO,
Hello,
70s,
hello.
yeah. That would have been 70s, so that's, yeah, nearly 50 years ago. Which means that for all the young people that Stefano Domenicali is trying to attract to Formula One would have gone completely over their heads. Yeah. Hadjar doing Hadjar things early on, jousting around, getting some good moves in, but it was just a shame he didn't get any points for his efforts, though, really, for me. That was the only thing I really noticed about Racing Bulls this weekend.
Yeah, I think on my end, the only time I noticed them was when Haja pitted. That's why I'm just gonna read literally what I wrote over here. Like, honestly, mates, I was dozing off half the time during the race because nothing happened and the broadcast didn't do anything but to benefit the race because it was just focusing on a few fights. So yeah, I didn't really catch what happened with the recaps. I know Haja and Alonso tussled. I didn't even notice Lawson at all during the race. Yeah, so I was kind of like, oh, you tried to get more on the safety car, but it didn't work out. So it's like, okay. So yeah, it's pretty much on my end.
Yeah, I think Hadjar would probably be a bit gutted to lose that final position, final points position to Sainz, especially Sainz on his ultra long medium stint just managed to beat him with tire wear. And not sure how he would feel because like he would finish right ahead of Tsunoda, wouldn't it? So is that just like a bad omen of like of how the Red Bull is? It's like, oh, I'll still be here with a supposedly superior car. So I mean, it's not technically supposed to be on the race specifically itself because there's nothing much of Racing Bulls, but I think this is, would roughly where they were expected to be. The podium was a great memory and all, but and I think that's pretty much the rest of the season done for, unless they're specifically making any more developments, which at this point I kind of doubt so.
Yeah, it's. I don't think there's any developments coming for that Racing Bulls. I think it's going to be pretty static for the rest of the season. It would just be a case of if they can extract things from it. At circuits that also favour it, it's a very neutral, very sort of flowing car. That we look at where it's done well at circuits where you can sort of build up a bit of a rhythm, a bit of pace. So, Kota, Brazil, Qatar are going to be circuits that potentially really favour this car. The heavy sort of stop-start zones of Mexico and Las Vegas, maybe not to their liking. So, we'll see what comes from Racing Bulls, but just a bit of a sort of blank slate weekend for them. Haas, however, another one of the Tale of Two Kitties sort of outings for these guys. Ocon qualified 19th, finished 18th. Behrmann, however, snuck it into Q3, qualified 9th, and finished 9th.
Yeah, which we didn't see pretty much any of because of the race directions again. So Behrmann does this absolute blinder of a Grand Prix and no one notices, essentially, which is a shame because no one was really expecting much from Haas here, I don't think, including Haas. So that was quite a nice surprise. And Ocon, no idea what happened with him. For once, we can't say he was sacrificing himself to help out Behrmann because they were just nowhere near each other all weekend. It's a bit of a curious one there. The only other interesting thing I saw coming out of the weekend was that there is word of Doohan potentially going to Haas as a reserve driver and a potential stand-in for Behrmann for if and when he gets his Grand Prix ban because of the penalty point situation, which, considering the Haas can be good occasionally, as Behrmann has demonstrated here, could be a good opportunity for Doohan if he got in for one of the last races this season just to. Then would be quite amusing if it was one of those crazier races, bags himself a couple of points, gets ahead of Colapinto to win the standings, and gets to stick two fingers up at Alpine. That would be quite a nice full circle moment, I think.
That would be very fun. I'd like to see that happen. I think it'd be interesting to see Doohan performing in it, especially because the Haas is markedly better than the Alpine. We could see sort of an interesting performance there. Behrmann, though, operating on another level this weekend. Stunning stuff, and that brilliant dive ball on Alex Albon. He came from miles back. It is worth rewatching that one just for that. His racecraft is really coming together, though, and as much as it pains me to say, he's beginning to school Ocon a fair bit. In the last four outings, he's finished ahead of his teammate, and in the last three, he qualified ahead of him as well. Ocon's strong opening to the season is holding him ahead in the points, but if Behrman keeps squeezing points out of these final few Grand Prix, he'll catch him. 10 points and four places separate them. It's not going to be out of the question for Behrman to start.
Well, you see what Sainz's podium did for him in the standings, but he's only about 3 points separated from a few places below him. It only needs one good weekend for a couple of them to then get past him again. It's that really tight mid.
Yeah, Ocon is pretty much riding entirely on finishing fifth in Australia at the start of the season and then getting a few points finishes after that to really keep him ahead. So Behrman just needs one good outing and he's up there. I don't know if any of you got anything else to add with Haas.
Yeah, I think for Behrman, he's been a lot more consistent. And yeah, like really, really great qualifying for him and drive as well. I think Ocon was suffering from brake issues, so pretty much, yeah, it was just that. Again, the TV broadcast was just horrible, so I don't think I saw Haas a lot as well, so I don't think there was a lot to add. But yeah, it's really interesting to see the difference between Behrman and Ocon, because Behrman is a rookie and Ocon has been racing for quite a bit as well. So for a rookie to school someone more senior than him in his very first year, so that's interesting to see. Are they both on multi-year contracts with Haas, if I'm not mistaken? I think they're both.
I think they both are.
Right, cool. So at least they're going to be together for quite a while. So yeah, again, pretty much that's all I have to say. There's not a lot I can add.
I'm just looking through the previous results. I think Ocon got into a stride right around the Monaco to Austrian Grand Prix, where he got quite a couple, a 7th, a 9th, and a 10th, where like Behrman at the time that he had like quite a few consecutive 11s, which definitely unlucky. So I think Ocon's mainly banking on that. I think for this race, Behrman was pretty calm, collected. I don't think there were any doubts in him finishing inside the top 10. I think the main news from Haas is what mainly from off the track would be when they finally got the opportunity for a TPC test, the testing of previous cars, when they got Grosjean to finally get back into a Haas car. Which, I mean, it is a nice feel-good story, but it's nothing related to their race.
Yeah, both Haas drivers just checked have got contracts until the end of 2026. So they've got a little longer to sort of get sort of something out of this car and also see what they like with next year's car. So there's opportunity. And again, I think Behrman knows that there's something waiting for him at Ferrari. So he's always going to be on a relatively short contract when it comes to Haas. And it would be exciting to see what he can do in something a bit more spicy. Because we've seen that but in one or two outings. But a full seat at Ferrari would be nice for Behrman. But overall, it was a good weekend for Haas. I think it showed their car does have the pace. They just need to be able to find a way to get both drivers to extricate it from the car. Meanwhile, completely bum weekend for Alpine. Gasly qualified 20th, finished 19th, and Colapinto qualified 18th and finished 16th.
I think at this point, Alpine. I don't even know. Are they like looking forward to next season? Their engine program is going to be scrapped anyways. They're going to be a Mercedes customer team next year. So, what more can they do? And I guess the main thing is better to evaluate what happens to Colin Pinto in the second seat, which it makes me come to the question, like, they don't do that badly. It's like Colin Pinto isn't doing that great either.
Exactly. Yeah. Like what was the point? Like, seriously, like, what was the point of binning Duhan? Like, Colin Pinto, it doesn't look like a much more optimistic with replacement anyways. But yeah, I don't think Alpine has a really good track record with Singapore. I know last year was pretty much a weekend for them to ride off as well. But yeah, I somehow Colapinto did better than Gasly this weekend, and Gasly has a long term deal with Alpine, and Colapinto still doesn't have a contract for 2026. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, pretty much it was just what on earth is happening with Alpine anymore. But then again, do we really need to know the answer? So yeah.
Apparently they're choosing between Colapinto and Aaron for next year. And at this point, I'm thinking, well, if you're not going to bring Doohan back, then you might as well stick Paul Aaron in the car, because I don't know what more information you need from Colapinto, really. You can't get much worse. It's when every driver currently on the grid has scored points at least once and has finished inside the top six at least once, and you're the one driver who hasn't. You kind of look at it and go, yeah, not really pinnacle of motorsport in terms of a driver there, and it's mad that Lance Stroll's managed to get into the top six at least once, considering he's Lance Stroll, but Colapinto hasn't. And you go, yeah, that's worked out really well for you there, Alpine. Great job as usual. That 100 race plan, as we talked about before we hit record, is really going to plan for you.
It's got to be even more galling for Gasly though, because we've seen proper glimpses of what he can actually achieve if he's given a half decent race car, and he's just been absolutely shafted by the team this season. And it's a team that's given up since the summer break. One can only hope they're putting
Given up since about 3 years ago.
One can only hope that all the effort they aren't putting into their race weekends, they're putting into the A526 or whatever next year's chassis is going to be called. Maybe they'll call
Maybe
it
they should stick Colapinto in the Mazda Cup over in the States. There you go.
maybe they've just got to find something exciting, something in next year's car. Either way, if they want us to talk about them, they ought to do just something. Colapinto still yet to score, and Gasly has been pointless since Spa. It's been a long old time for neither of them to get in the top 10. So it's, yeah, gutting.
I'm not sure how closely tied they are with their endurance efforts, because like I think the Alpine endurance team is doing a lot better. So like something's going better there.
And it's funny to see how like preseason started. Like Sauber was looked like it was a goner when we were doing preseason, and look where Sauber is and where Alpine is right now. So yeah.
It's a very tricky one being Alpine, but we'll move into our winners and spinners. We'll start off with our winners. Timo, I'll let you go with yours first.
Well, there's a lot of choices here I've got this weekend, but I'll go with Fernando Alonso. Just that recovery drive, as Jonathan mentioned, after that pit stop of 9 seconds or whatever it was quite impressive. And then combine that with some classic team radio and just general Alonso-ness. There was only ever going to be one winner for me there.
Nice. I'm going to go for George Russell. Rebuilt his weekend really well after a shunt early on. Aced the start, especially after sitting on cold tyres for a fair while as well, and then just dominated from there. His qualifying two, where he sets one lap record, goes for a second push lap, and sets another record again on top of that just to prove it. So, yeah, phenomenal effort from the boy from King's Lynn.
Yeah, I think I'll go. Yeah, for me it's Mr. Saturday and Sunday as well, George Russell. For nailing the track record around the circuit, and also just given his history with the track, just poor luck or like just mistakes, and he finally nailed a very, very clean weekend in Singapore, I think. A very good weekend in Singapore and delivering the win. So yeah, hats off to him.
My vote for a winner would be actually, as I previously mentioned, Carlos Sainz, actually. I think he's just continuing his recent acclimatization with Williams. It goes to show that his recent podium was not a fluke. And I think it gives Williams a good shot to have both drivers are operating on a decent level to pick up any scrap points along the way. So decent job, and upwards and onwards.
Really solid from Carlos Sainz. Flip side of the coin, though, spinners. Timo, we'll start with yours.
I think it was too easy, so I went for Kick Sauber just because I don't think it's going to happen too much more this season. And they'll be a winner at some point as well this season, for the rest of the season, I reckon. So we'll get the last spinner in now for them.
For me, spinner for me has got to be McLaren, actually. A bit of a rogue call, but they've got themselves into a tricky situation.
Wins Constructors disappoints Jesse.
Yeah, and they've got themselves in a tricky situation, need to find a way out of it. Now the constructors' title is sorted, they can leave Norris and Piastri to race with no risk. Piastri is gagging to be let off the lead, and with some racy circuits ahead, it'll be interesting to see what he does with that. But I think ultimately people are going to look back on this and go, no one's going to remember that McLaren won the Constructors' Championship. They're going to remember how messy they made the drivers' title. And again, this is
Just
always
start adopting his inner Brad Pitt and just take Lando out of turn one, lap one, every single race from now on, and just go, oops.
Well, this is the thing. Everyone always remembers the driver's title. No one ever remembers the
The
constructors. Apart from
constructors,
like on a
yep.
few special occasions, you never remember who won the constructors' title in a certain year. Everyone remembers Brawn won it in 09. Everyone remembers that in reality, McLaren won it in 07. Oh, no, Ferrari won it in 07 after McLaren was stripped of it and all those things. But you never remember like any other year unless there's some absolute high watermark for it. This year is one of those years where it was just sort of, okay, McLaren have won the constructors, well done. But who's going to win the drivers? We don't know. And it's all that effort for naught in my mind.
Yeah, I think for my spinner, it's a bit of a controversial one. I'm a McLaren fan. I'm a Piastri fan, actually. I'm going to give it the Piastri. I think given how well he's done early this season, like the cool, calm, collected Piastri, I think just suffering from, I think after Zandvoort, it kind of just went downhill, like just really bad race weekends and the championship fight coming to a close. You can really see the pressure getting to him as well. And I'm just thinking of the incidents in Monza, that DNF in Baku, and now this incident in Singapore. I think it the those these kind of little mistakes is really starting to mess with his mind mentally. So I just hope that now that they seal off the constructors' fight, like what Jesse has mentioned, that just let both drivers race, and I hope that he can really regain his early season momentum in this championship fight. Because really, just one terrible race weekend, one disqualification, one DNF can just swing things around again, like what happened with Lando in Zandvoort as well. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, my spinner is more of a kind of a low-key and expected one, but I will go for Yuki Tsunoda actually, because I think coming into this weekend, there was some sense of forward momentum going on. Like, I think Yuki scored in two of the past three races coming into Singapore, did one of his better races from Baku. I think he finished in sixth place. So decent sense, and it could be the sense of, oh, okay, he may not keep the Red Bull seat, but then like Red Bull might just throw him back to AlphaTauri or something. Oh wait, Racing Bulls. Yeah, and then like it could be the sense that, oh, Yuki might finally be turning a corner, but this weekend's just been kind of anonymous, and it's never been a good look to be lapped by your teammate who's still clearly holding a much faster car behind. So not the best look, and not I don't think you'll do much good chances of him remaining in the Red Bull family, or even in the secondary team next season.
Yeah, I don't think Tsunoda is going to be around next season, unfortunately. I think Red Bull have got an interesting concept of what they want to do next year, moving some young drivers up into that junior team again. I don't think Tsunoda fits within that plan, unfortunately. Moving on from our winners and spinners, though, to our predictions review, which saw only 2 points awarded this weekend. 1 point for me for predicting George Russell pole position, and we'll be kind and give Leah 1 point for saying Carlos Sainz in the points, because she did later rectify that to say, yeah, top five is on the cards for him. But we'll give her one for that.
Conveniently forgot that.
I conveniently forgot that. I mean, it doesn't overall change the fact that I'm slowly closing in on you if I get 1 point from here on out at every race weekend and you get none, as you have been for the past few weekends. I could overtake you in the standings.
Yeah,
It's
I have been more ambitious than usual, whereas that is now finished for the season. I'm back to, I might have to take this seriously just for the
fair enough.
sake of
He's locking in for a title fight here. It's all systems go.
papaya rules, Jesse, papaya rules.
Meanwhile, over in Fantasy Formula One World for Singapore, hope wins out, which is unusual. 185 points. The Cat Dad's in second, 183 points, and on the curbs, 182. Very close in the top three. Very fun indeed.
Also, Leto taking a point off me, so I was just that was the reason for that. Oh, you buggers.
He's getting dropped after this weekend for that performance. Catherine's Curse P10, Jaffa Cake Racing P21, Red Bull Rejects P62, and of course, Kiwi Burners P63. Change your team. Overall, the victory 3,313 points, Detiklias 3,266 points, and Lando in third 3,134 points. Catherine's Curse remains in fifth on the curbs P9, Cargo Moustache P12, The Mixing Pot P19, Red Bull Rejects P62, Kiwi Burners P63 with now 127 points, just 952 points away from P62. I'm still surprised they've actually got a positive points tally, because they must be
Mercedes helped them massively this weekend, to be fair. 67 points of the 127 was just Mercedes this weekend. So yeah, it's still not great. I mean, when you're nearly 1,000 points off second last, not the best performance that's giving Alpine a run for the money, but that's about all that you can say there, really.
Someone's got to challenge Alpine. Otherwise, that is all for this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back soon with a preview of the American Grand Prix as we head over to Austin, Texas. In the meantime, though, Timo, where can you be found?
This week, you can find me over on the Curbs IndyCar, where we'll have an Indy Next 2025 season review. And I've got two On the Curbs interviews out this week, one with Silvia Gonzalez Gallego and the other with Maria Lina Pavley. So go over to Instagram to check those out later on in the week. Or now, actually, by the time you listen to this.
Yeah, it'll be about Monday evening by the time people might listen to this. Nathan, Jonathan, where can the people find you?
So I usually, so I'm writing for Paddock Chronicle on and off-ish, so that's where you can find me. Else I probably just post on LinkedIn, so.
Nice.
I think people can find me at Jonathan BW Koo on Instagram, and then I usually just write off and on for various publications, sometimes Formula One related and sometimes not.
Fun stuff. And if you'd like more from me, you can find me as at Jesse on Cars online on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And of course, you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly as well. We'll have a new issue out after this goes to press. And of course, there'll be the Classic Car Weekly podcast, which we haven't recorded one in a little while. So we need to get back on the bandwagon for that. Otherwise, it has been a joy having both of you guys on joining us for the review of the Singapore Grand Prix. Thank you. And of course, like I said, we'll be back with a preview of all the action in Austin for the American Grand Prix.